Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
Fried fam, if you've been giving everything you've got to your work and are running on fumes, you're not alone. Burnout isn't a failing. It's your nervous system stuck in survival mode, and you can't sustain your energy from that place. That's why we've created Unfried, a 5-month group coaching program that helps mission-driven high achievers like yourself rebuild safety, calm their nervous system, and recover in a way that lasts. When you heal, you don't just get your energy back, you get your mission back. We've got 2 groups of 6 starting October 7th and 8th. Apply now and secure your spot at katedonovan.com/unfried.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled. And we want that post-burnout growth for you too.
Fried fam, sometimes the world is really trying very hard to put you in someone's orbit, and it is your job to pay attention to that. So the person that the world was trying to bring into my orbit from so many directions is today's guest, Barry Goldstein, who is a visionary composer and sound expert, celebrated for his Grammy Award-winning production, 69 Freedom Special, with Les Paul. Yeah, that Les Paul. With over 30 years at the intersection of music and healing, ding, 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 that's where we're going, Barry's expertise seamlessly bridges scientific innovation and artistic expression. His collaborations with leaders like Dr. Daniel
Amen.
Dr. Joe Dispenza and Dave Asprey highlight the powerful role of music in enhancing emotional and cognitive health. Barry coined the term acousticeuticals for his innovative products that merge sound with health benefits. His music is utilized in hospitals and health environments, offering a variety of benefits. He also specializes in musical branding, creating sonic signatures that amplify corporate and personal missions. Like, my brain is so happy reading this. His contributions include projecting ambient soundscapes for New York Times bestselling authors such as Shirley MacLaine, Anita Murjani, and Neil Donald Walsh, with compositions reaching Billboard's top 10 New Age albums. His music also features prominently in major films and TV shows and #1 PBS specials. Committed to education, Barry offers courses on the therapeutic applications of music and shares expertise throughout his book, The Secret Language of the Heart. Highly recommended. Engaging with Barry Goldstein means embracing the transformative power of sound to enhance well-being, productivity, and storytelling through the universal language of music. Barry Goldstein, welcome to Fried.
Thank you. So glad to be here. That was like some intro. We probably have like 3 minutes left. So,
listen, I ask for 150 words and then I read what you send me. So that's what I got. But I did take a minute on some of those sentences because I wanted people to have a little tiny sneak peek about what we're getting into today. So we're going to start with your story as we typically do and then jump into the deep and real.
Okay, great. Well, what would you like to know? How far do you want me to go back?
I would like you to go back to the moment where you were producing in New York City and you were realizing that you were spending a lot of time and silly specifications and repetitions and a lot of hours to get to a 4-minute song.
There you go. Yeah. So let's start with the 4-minute song, actually, because I think that when you're talking about burnout, you have to also look at what burns within. Mm-hmm. So the passion, desire, mission that is there to start with. And for me, it was always about the 4-minute song from the time that my dad bought me. If you look back, and there's a Gibson Les Paul Cherry Sunburst guitar. My dad bought me that guitar when I was about 14 years old. We couldn't afford it. And my dad made me make a promise that if he was going to buy me that guitar, that I was going to stick with music. And, you know, at the time I was a 14-year-old kid. So I'm like, yeah, of course, you know, I made the promise, not realizing that in that moment, it was more of a rite of passage. And that that guitar became really symbolic for me of my dad's belief in me. From the name Les Paul that was imprinted on it, that I looked at over and over as I became a professional producer. And I would look at that guitar and see kind of like the cash register and money going off in my head, right? Because I knew I could sell that guitar and literally get a few months rent for it. But the passion that was created when my dad gave me that guitar, and me sitting on the edge of my bed and writing those 4-minute songs. So that's where the fire started. Was in not having any pressure and the inspiration and the, for me, the phenomenon of creating something from nothing, where you're sitting down and you're in a creative process. That 4-minute song wasn't there however long it takes you to birth it, whether it's in 10 minutes or 10 hours. At the other side of it, there's something there that did not exist before and was fueled from literally the flames of your own heart. So as I, you know, became a professional producer, and that was, you know, the intention and that was the goal, was to really live up to that promise of, you know, becoming so apt at creating music that I could literally earn an income and a career within it. And that's really what happened. All those years later, I became a major label producer. And literally, you know, the pressure of that, like most people who have a burnout story, and I'm sure you have one of your own, right? Sometimes we look at a job or a career as the pinnacle of our existence. And when we get to what we think is the plateau, it's not what we thought it was, or it doesn't fan the flames of that passion the way that we thought it was going to. And that's exactly what happened with me as I had the pressure of having to create that 4-minute song, but 100 hours of studio time and having to deliver that week after week after week, I started to lose my love for music. And with that came anxiety, came sleeping challenges, came stress, you know, and at that time I didn't know what that was doing to my physical body. You know, most of us, I think, associate stress and burnout more with our emotions, but it also has an effect, as I'm sure we'll dive into, on our internal pharmacy and how that affects our physical body as well. But at the time, I remember thinking to myself, wow, this is not what I thought. Like, how do I get back? How do I find that kid who sat on the edge of his bed again? How do I reconnect with that vision and mission? And, you know, I knew that for me, I knew intuitively and I knew from doing inner work already, even back then, that the heart was my target, you know, that mission, passion, right? All the things that we looked as and two, for purpose, were that's where I wanted to re-engage with. So I did some research and found that our heart at a relaxed state beats at about 60 beats per minute. And at the time, I wasn't doing this type of music that I'm doing now. Yeah. I was a club kid. I was doing hip hop. I was doing house music. Like I like lived in the clubs. So when I saw 60 beats per minute, I was already aware of that, you know, of that term beats per minute, because that's what DJs used, right? In terms of creating their sets.
But they're not usually doing 60 beats per minute.
You know, in some cases they are, like reggae music, right? A lot of reggae music is at 60 beats per minute, you know, and, you know, that was part of some of the sets there, and a cool down, or, you know, the slow dances, right, when you're at the end of the night and those things. So I think they have that idea of knowing the dynamics of going from highs to lows and looking at peak performance of their crowd, not just, you know, like not just within corporate environments, but that's what DJs do. They're reading the energy of the people that they're there to serve, which is a lesson that a lot of corporations need to learn and in order to battle with burnout. But anyway, so I said, what would happen if I set my metronome to 60 beats per minute? And instead of composing music, what would happen if I just allowed the music to come through me, decompose to it, and target my heart at a relaxed state? I wonder what the outcome would be. And through doing that, and without any pressure, I started to go through this process of creating these hour-long pieces that literally I didn't think anyone was going to listen to. You know, it was the opposite of what I was creating in a four-minute song, which you're trying to create memorable hooks and choruses that people will sing along to. This is the opposite. You don't want people to get into the analytical mind and starting with myself, just taking a journey to a state where I was resetting my circadian rhythms. I didn't know that at the time. And I was also moving to a parasympathetic state, which I didn't know at the time. And in addition, I was targeting what we now know to be heart coherence, which is creating smooth and orderly rhythms in my own heart that literally act as an orchestrator or a conductor to the rest of the physical body. So a lot of these terms were not being used yet when I started doing this, which was like, you know, 1989. So we're looking at like 36 years ago. And so with that, I started to play some of those pieces. And at the time I was seeing a massage therapist and she heard what I was doing. And she goes, wow, this is like exactly what I am looking for in my massage therapy practice. Can I use these? Because they didn't really have hour long pieces at that time. So she started using them. I started, you know, introducing them to friends, and people started using them in dentist offices and with parents who, you know, were combating dementia and needed to quiet, you know, the street noise to get to sleep at night in lively areas of New York, like Harlem. And also for people who were passing. So the circle of life, people birthing children into the world, were beginning to use it. And people who were transitioning and, you know, who had chronic or terminal illnesses were using it to move out of states of anxiety and fear and to get the families more in that state where that fear wasn't being projected to the people who needed it most. So that's really the story and how I turned burnout to work, you know, with burning within. And, you know, my belief is that we never truly burn out, you know, because on a spiritual level, that flame never dies. It's always there, but it can go down pretty low. And it's really up to us to reengage and fan the flames of our own hearts and learn how to do that, especially when we were going through some type of burnout. How do you refuel that passion, that desire, that mission? And that means a lot of different things in a lot of different environments, from everything from corporate burnout to peak performance in athletes. You know, it moves across the board of many, many different careers, you know, creative blocks for musicians or dancers. You know, it's just another form of burnout. So I love the fact that you have this podcast that really addresses that, because I think from what I looked at in the latest stats, I think it was like over 70% of people are affected by burnout in some way.
Yeah. So I, you know, we are on episode 320 or so. We've been doing this about 6 years, and my background, just to, so you know, so you have more complete pictures, I'm an acupuncturist by degree. So I've been in the healing space for a very long time, and I've trained at the HeartMath Institute as well. So there's some good crossover there. Burnout, depending on what you read, is anything from 30% to 80% across industries. And it says, you know, the kind of most common standard thing is that one in every two of us is going to burn out at some point in their careers. So 50% of us. But that means to me that everyone is eventually affected by burnout. Because if even when it's just you, and then your partner is going to be affected by it because it's affecting your life. And so it's going to have an influence over everybody at some point, whether it's their own personal experience or not. But one of the things you said about your own personal experience is that you thought at one point you got there, you got to this sort of pinnacle of career mm-hmm. and said, is this it? Like, is this, mm-hmm. I thought I wanted this. And I think that that's an extremely common result in people that experience burnout. We chase after something and chase after something and chase after something. We forget why the heck we were chasing it. And then we get there and we look around and we're like, the view is not even that good from up here.
Right. I mean, it's never really the pinnacle, you know, is what I learned. Like we never really reach a pinnacle. And who wants to, right? You know, and that's what I've learned from many years. It's like I've reinvented myself, you know, a dozen times over. And, you know, when we think something is the pinnacle, we're not dreaming big enough in terms of what we can achieve. Because actually, you know, when I started addressing that burnout, I realized, oh my God, this is another whole area. And, you know, that led me to, within that, using these tools myself, like nourishing myself musically, even though music was part of what was causing it, you know, in my mind, which it wasn't the music that was causing it, right? It was the music business per se. But not even that. It was really what ultimately it is how we're translating it through our inner thoughts. And that's really where we can tap into what we have control over, because ultimately it's how we're translating what's going on in our life and our ability to translate it in a different way. Yeah. You know, like we don't have to. Yeah. You know, we don't have to be in that industry if we don't want to, or we don't have to be doing 100 hours a week. You know, we have the ability to say, wow, this is not working, listening to my heart. And that's what I kind of did, was I pivoted. But in the meantime, while I was still creating in the music business, I kind of redefined it. And I stopped thinking of this as my spiritual music, right? And stop thinking of that as my pop music. And, you know, I'm sure that you've heard that expression, we can only serve one master. And what I decided was all music can be healing. And all I have to do is bring that awareness into the creative process and this, what I call divine collaborations, right? Where we're tapping into something beyond ourselves. We're not fully creating on our own. And some, you know, people think that's woo, you know, or it's, you know, very spiritually based, but some of our biggest scientists in our biggest creators in the world from hundreds of years back have used these techniques, including Mozart, who literally sat down and composed with every orchestra part, right, from start to finish. From Einstein, who literally, when he had creative blocks, he would pick up a violin and piano and they'd hear him from another room saying, oh my God, I got it. So this balance of science and spirituality, and also the ability to use our imagination and to tap into an unlimited field where anything is possible, is one of the most amazing ways that we can really tap into reversing burnout. Because ultimately, we don't always have all the answers of what's next. And that's where mindfulness comes into this, listening to the heart. Some of these ancient technologies that we use to biohack for thousands of years, as you know, being an acupuncturist, that I'm sure that even the symbol in Chinese medicine incorporates music within that symbol itself.
The symbol for medicine, for those of you who are confused.
Right, exactly. For the symbol of medicine, music is in that. So it's something we know, but it's not the first thing that most people grab for. when they're thinking about battling burnout.
So one of the things that you mentioned earlier, and I thought, you know, I read it in your book and I laughed because, you know, people that don't create music don't know things like this. And I didn't know what it was. And it made me think of something else. So earlier you said that, you know, what would happen if I set my metronome to 60 beats per minute? And I used to live in Prague, and Prague has this giant metronome that just swings. It doesn't actually, you know, it keeps a rhythm basically, but it's a huge statue, and it's in a place where there was a statue of Stalin that got torn down and they put up this massive metronome. So it's a really like funny historical thing that the Czech people did to sort of like throw it in Stalin's face. So when I saw the word metronome, that was the first thing I thought of was the Prague metronome. And then I was like, do people know what this is? So can you explain to people what it would mean in a musical sense to set your metronome to 60 beats per minute?
Yeah, so a metronome is just something that keeps time consistently, right, and precisely. So when you set it, it just keeps going tick-tock, 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 right, on and on. So you can synchronize to it. And there's actually done experiments. You can look this up online. If you just type in like metronomes synchronizing together, they've done some interesting experiments that show that even when metronomes are all starting at different times and tempos, that eventually they synchronize to each other and they moved in synchrony. And you can watch this. And that's really part of what coherence is. And people may be asking, well, how does that apply to music? And so what I was doing back then, we now know is called something called entrainment. So entrainment can be defined as an internal rhythm synchronizing to an external rhythm. Internal, in the case, our heart is our metronome that is has a beat that is basically being generated. And the music is the external rhythm, which also has a tempo that is being generated. And when we play music at that, about that tempo, and also different tempos, we can synchronize to different tempos and target different things. We literally can target our heart or our desired state utilizing the music because our respiratory rate adjusts to that tempo. And we slow down when it's 60 beats per minute. And I'm sure the other way around, you know, if you listen to the theme song of Rocky while you're working out, right, it's the other way around. You start adapting to a faster and more inspiring tempo. And this is a way that we can target peak performance, not just within athletes, but within, you know, corporate environments as well. So that's the basis of the metronome, and that the heart is really sending out that tempo, not just randomly, right, to the rest of our body. So if you think of our body as an orchestra and the different sections within our body and systems, our lymphatic systems, our respiratory systems, our circulatory systems, think of those as like sections in an orchestra. If they all played randomly, whatever time they want to and whatever, you know, melodies they wanted to, right, what would it sound like? It would sound pretty dissonant.
A really crappy jam band.
Right, exactly. So they have to have an agreed upon tempo.
Yeah.
And that's what the heart does. It literally sets that metronome and it sends that out to the rest of the body. It creates these smooth and orderly rhythms, which is how coherence, as you said, you studied with HeartMath, that's how coherence is defined by those smooth, orderly rhythms. But there are many ways to get to those smooth and orderly rhythms. And music is one of them. Connecting with positive emotions like gratitude, kindness, compassion is another. But music combines the two together in a way that nothing else does because we can access that almost immediately through specific music.
Well, and one of the things you wrote in your book says that there's an interesting study that has been shown to listening to a metronome with a steady beat of 66 beats per minute can be more effective in reducing anxiety than sitting in silence. Fred Pham, I want you to just like stop on this for a minute. First, I want you to think about the idea of your body being a really shitty jam band, because a lot of you probably feel like that's pretty true right now. I can understand that on an interoceptive level, on an organ level, how it just feels like these parts are not even in the same genre, never mind same tempo, but that there's there's really clear research, and I was reading another book on music and neuroscience a couple of weeks ago, and there's really clear research about what happens when we listen to different types of music. This is fascinating. 66 beats per minute as a metronome, more effective at reducing anxiety. If you haven't found another way that's worked for you, you can literally type in metronome 66 beats per minute in Google and it will play one for you. Like this is available to you. You can use this anytime. But one of the things that I want to ask you about is something that I told my mom I was doing this episode. And my mother said, you know, every time I try to listen to meditative music of any sort, I get really anxious. It fuels my anxiety. It doesn't work for me. I said, why do you keep listening to that kind of music? Like, listen to Van Morrison or Joan Armatrading that you know calms you down, like, you know, because that's your favorite music. So listen to that. But is there an argument to be made for making sure that the thing that you're listening to, you just like at least?
Mm-hmm. No, there's definitely, that's a big topic for me.
Yeah.
Because so many people are looking for, especially in this day and age, are looking for frequency panaceas, like one size fits all.
Right.
Like if you listen to this, this is going to be for that. This is going to be for that. You know, there are some basics to start with, you know, that work, we know, with, you know, such as the 60 beats per minute. Also, binaural beats targeting specific brainwaves. We could talk a little bit more about that as well. But there's a ton of research around preferred music.
Mm.
Right. The music that you prefer is going to be, they don't necessarily use the word healing, but if we look at like even the word healing, how are we defining healing? Like most people define healing as something that's just happening to the physical body. But I'll tell you a story. Way back when I started to do this, and I grew up in the Bronx, and the only term that people were using that was relative to this at the time was sound healers.
Right.
Right. And so I said, well, this is the closest thing. I guess I'm a sound healer. So when I started using that word, it freaked my friends out that I grew up within the Bronx. And literally, you know, having conversations like, dude, like, what's wrong with you, man? Like, what are you talking about? Like healing? Like, what are you like? The guy on Sunday nights who like, you know, they would like Oral Roberts and all the different, you know, things that they were used to. That's how they identified healing.
Right.
So a lot of us define healing, and when we hear that word, it's a turnoff to people, especially like in cultures and subcultures that don't really understand that healing can really be anything. Anytime you are getting an upgrade of some kind, to me, that's a healing. So before you listen to a piece of music, if you're in a state of anxiety and then it calms you down, then to me, that's a healing. Right? You had an upgrade. If you listen to a piece of music at night and you can't sleep, but it helped you wind down and move into conducive brainwaves, like and bridge down out of beta into theta and alpha brainwave states, then that's a healing. So I literally had to explain to them, hey, have you ever listened to a song and got like goosebumps? Have you ever listened to a song and you no explanation, but you started crying? Wouldn't you consider that a healing of some kind? And those same guys who were literally, you know, got off kilter by that, you know, 20 years later were using my music to help them sleep at night or before chemo treatments or even a friend passing, you know, through cancer to utilizing my music. So I think, you know, the word healing even changes, but to your point, and another study shows that people are in psychotic states. You cannot use relaxing music for them because their brainwaves are moving so fast that it's way too far apart. You have to bridge down from a high beta and start bridging into different brainwaves. So we can talk about that a little bit, the different brainwave states. We have high beta, which is the fastest moving. Mm-hmm. Then we go into alpha, which is next, or more a relaxed but attentive state. Then we go slow down even more into theta, which is where imagination and flow state occur. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times where we reach meditative states are in alpha and theta. And then our sleep states are in delta. Mm-hmm. So we can target these different brainwave states through music. But if you have to meet people where they're at, and one size does not fit all. And that's a great point for your mom. And this might be a bridge for her, right? Not to go from this busy beta brainwave state directly to meditative music, but can she scale down?
Yeah.
Right? Can she listen to that Van Morrison, right, for 5 minutes? Listen to Joan Armatrading, right, for another five. Maybe Sarah McLachlan next. Maybe James Taylor, you know, after that. And then now you're kind of like scaling down to more minimalistic music, and then try the meditative music. And again, all meditative music is not created equal. And studies show that that music at 60 beats per minute, not a lot of melody, and lower, slower tones, you know, are really great for that. But not everybody's doing that. And that's been the nature of my work. And part of the success of it is knowing that sweet spot of where to engage people and where not to. And also from a compositional standpoint, what works and what doesn't. So I would ask your mom to like check out some of my music after she scales down.
Yeah.
And if it's something she's not used to as well, to try it for 30 days. Like, don't just give up on it. Use it just in the background. It's not the same methodology as, oh, I have to listen to this right, as you listen to Van Morrison. Just to have it on, like when you light a candle in your room, it's there. You shifted the ambience of your room because you wanted something more peaceful. But you don't have to necessarily sit there and stare at the candle to get the benefits. So it's utilizing music very Pavlovian, the way Pavlov trained his dogs. So here's a bell before you give you food every night.
Sorry. Right.
Do that for 30 days with music, because ultimately we're looking to resynchronize our rhythms. When we reach burnout, what's really happening? We're moving out of rhythm with ourselves, with our mission, with our passion, our purpose. And you might hear people even say within that, you know, I just don't feel like myself lately. Like, I feel out of sync.
Yeah.
What better to get you into sync than music?
Yeah. I think it's really great permission for everybody listening to know that, like, if you have been trying to meditate and you've put music on, or you've been trying to do something and it's not been hitting you right, then that's okay. And here's this method that Barry just provided for you. Like, downgrade yourself a little, like, come ease into it. Do not jump into the ice bucket immediately. Like, go slow, take your time, move yourself through stages. That's like, I think one of the other things that's really common amongst the people that listen to this podcast, amongst the burnt out amongst us, is we want the same thing that you were saying before. Like, give me the prescription for the thing that I need to do, and I'll do it, and I'll force my way through it, which is why we're here in the first place, why we ended up burnt out. And that it's relieving for me to hear, like, well, no, it might not work that way. You might have to downgrade. You might have to take your time. You might have to ease these things in until you can find this space. I want to talk about resonance and dissonance for a moment, especially sure, as it relates to the heart and the brain. Because this is another thing that I think happens big time during burnout. A lot of times people that burn out were striving for something, like we mentioned before, and got there and looked around and said, well, this isn't what I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then don't know what should come next. And their brains are not really online because they're burnt out. So they start to spiral in, well, this is the only thing I know. This reinvention, this pivot that you talked about before. Basically, my question is, how can we use music to help people get to a place where they feel that that pivot is available to them?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good question? Is that
too- That's a great question. Yeah. And just circling back to, you know, I think that there is a general prescription, right? Of okay, well, how can I do that? You said like everyone wants the prescription. So I'll give you it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
The prescription is you have to re-engage with your heart, right? And you have to come back home to you, right? The essence of yourself. And we very often think of, and I'll get into the dissonance and the resonance. I'm just circling back for a moment with it as well. Because ultimately, coming home to the heart is not just something that sounds good, right? Think of it from a musical perspective. Most of us are thinking about music when we say, oh, I just want a prescription. Write me put the prescription for it. The prescription is music isn't just something that's happening to you. So you have to switch that perspective and move that from music is something that's also happening in me. And that was the big shift for me, realizing that that heartbeat, that breath, this internal symphony that are going on is what I needed to re-engage with and simplify it. If I could just imagine being able to tune in on such a subtle level that I can find gratitude in just placing my hands on my heart and closing my eyes and feeling my own heartbeat. Do it with me for a second. Close your eyes. Place your hands on your heart. And like as I'm doing that, I can feel my own heartbeat and just breathing into my heart, big breath in and a big sigh out. And if you do that a few times with your eyes closed, just bringing that big breath in through your heart and your big breath out, and you do this like at the beginning of your day, take a moment and say, and do this at the end of your day, do it in the middle of your day, like when you're trying to manage your energy more effectively and things are coming in that kind of take you off kilter or are pulling you away from that mission, that vision, that you, that's your home base. Because we all have a heartbeat, we all have our breath, but again, individualized medicine. Yours is not exactly like mine, and mine's not exactly like yours. And there's not one that has the exact same frequency. So when people ask me, can you tell me what frequency to use? I say, start with the frequency of your own heart. That's the most powerful frequency that you can tap into. And if you can learn what that feels like and say, oh my God, there I am. That's what I was looking for. Right? When I was setting the metronome, I didn't know that I could find it without it until many years later. Well, what would happen if I just start accessing it? By placing my hands on my heart, I'm creating a sacred intention, that an awareness around this area. And we know this is like being studied now, right? We're seeing that these coherent states. So when you move into that state of gratitude and you're tapping into that music within and you're moving into heart coherence, because when you hit those states of gratitude, your heart starts generating smoother and more orderly rhythms. It's not just affecting the heart. It's affecting your brain. And as you said, the neuroscience of that shows us that when we move into these coherent brainwave states, heart states, your heart starts generating more alpha brainwaves and moves you into these more coherent brainwave states. So this is called neurocardiology. It's new and it's very exciting, but we're learning that it's not either or. There's an interaction, and it's about finding the resonance, as you asked, like between the two of working with that, because ultimately we're looking. And this is the big prescription. The Native Americans said it best. The longest journey you'll ever take is from your mind to your heart. Our minds are way too active. We are over-engaged, overstimulated. We were 2 years ago. Think about what's going on now, like with AI. It's exciting, right? It's great in some ways, but also it's creating a lot of burnout as well, and people fear of missing out on things. So literally tapping back into and knowing what is resonant and dissonant for you is important. And that's why I said start with the heart, because in order for you to understand what's dissonant for you, if someone, your mom is right on, right? When someone recommends a piece of music to her and she's like, ah, that's doing it for me. It's dissonant for me. She knows her heart, right? And she knows she's not just randomly listening and saying, oh, I'll try to plug this in because it makes me anxious. She knows what's dissonant for her. And that starts by knowing you, knowing your own heart, what gives you pleasure, what is going to create that activation within your internal pharmacy is feeling relaxed. You'll start producing less cortisol, which is one of the biggest stress hormones. You'll start producing more dopamine, which is a reward hormone that gives us pleasure when we listen to something. So it's going in and saying, someone recommends a piece of music to you, listen to it, but don't listen with your ears. Close your eyes, place your hands on your heart. Ask yourself, does this make me feel contracted, like I need to cover up? Or does it make me feel expansive, like I'm underneath a beautiful night sky? And if you can just use that criteria, not just for music, for anything, for business, for this job, how does this job make me feel? Does it make me feel contracted? Maybe it's time to move on. Or maybe sometimes, you know, sometimes a little dissonance is okay because it helps you move energy, but well, not the large okay, dosages.
Love jazz.
I'm sorry?
If dissonance wasn't okay, we wouldn't love jazz.
Right. And it's in small doses, right? I mean, like when you hear jazz musicians using dissonance, a lot of times they're coming out into a progression that is now very harmonic.
Right.
So it's the contrast of the two and knowing how to use that. So using dissonance to release blocks, right? And we do that with progressive relaxation. Mm-hmm. Think of that, right? When you're doing progressive relaxation with someone, you're asking them to tighten up in a certain area. What are you doing? You're creating dissonance in that area so that they can understand then the dynamic and the contrast of then releasing that is multiplied by what, 10 times, because you understand the tension that was there and now it feels lighter. So ultimately, it's about dosage like any other medicine. And that's where we really need to go, like in the sound and healing community, as we move into more biohacking and wearables. And you have to realize that there's a lot we don't know with frequencies as well. And in medicine, it's first do no harm. So we don't have to engage, you know, and listen to things for as long as we think we do to get the benefit of them. The benefit can happen fairly quickly in most practices.
What do you think about, well, before I go there, Fried Fam, you've heard us talk about this contraction and expansion before. So Barry, I'm so grateful that you use that as an example, because it's something that we teach in our program. It's something, I mean, it's
beautiful.
Yeah, it's all over the place. So that made me really happy. So first things first, whatever you're listening to, whatever you're finding, whatever you're looking for, there's going to be a reaction one way or the other. That's your internal yes or no. That's how you learn how to trust yourself again, how to listen to yourself, how to find your way back to yourself. And it's okay. A, some dissonance okay is okay sometimes. B, it's okay to go back to things after some time. If they were dissonant in the past, you might find that they aren't now. So you're okay to leave something aside and come back to it at a different time when you've been through some other work. So now the question that I have, and this is something that I've spent a lot of time on over the years, but I don't think we've ever actually talked about on the podcast, which seems insane to me. Can we talk about the vibrational benefit? I'm just guessing you know this because if it's in your book, I didn't get to that part and I'm not sure, but I'm guessing the vibrational benefit of a mantra practice.
Yeah, no, that is in my book. Yes.
Oh, see, I didn't get to that part.
Yeah. And I'll share another personal story with you as well, because to some people, like even, you know, talking about like chanting Om, right? Yes. Seems very out there and very cliche even, right? Within context. And I will tell you that my dad was one of those people. Mm-hmm. Again, grew up in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. listened to Sinatra and the Rat Pack. He was definitely not, you know, tuning into like Ravi Shankar and, you know, and Eastern music or what would be considered healing or tapping into that. And my dad knew I was into all this as well. And, you know, he also thought that I was kind of, you know, not all there in terms of doing this. So when I found myself by my dad, when he was going through cancer and literally they were about to put him in hospice, and he was in a hospital bed and not really consciously there. His eyes were like moving around in his head. He wasn't able to have a conversation. And I literally was alone for the first time in almost like 6 months. Because, you know, when you have cancer, the family is there. And I found myself, me and my dad, alone in the hospital room. And intuitively, I had like an inner voice that was saying, chant to him. And so what did I do? Of course, I started arguing and saying, no way am I chanting like to my dad. Are you out of your mind? I'm not going to chant to my dad. But I kept kind of feeling that that's what I was supposed to do. So I decided to just close my eyes and place my hands on my heart. I went inward, started slowing my breathing down. And I literally went to the edge of my dad's bed and placed my hand on the top of my dad's head and found myself literally chanting Om, mm-hmm. which is said to contain every sound in the universe, you know, past, present, or future within it. You know, a lot, you know, I talk about the research behind that after this with you. But when I opened my eyes and it felt like there was like a heat kind of coming from my dad's head that wasn't there when I started it. And when I opened my eyes, my dad was staring like right at me, like literally. And we were able to communicate and he couldn't really talk, but I was able to have like literally a last conversation with him. And he was able to squeeze my hand and, you know, I was able to tell him how much I loved him. And I asked if you understood me and he was clasping my hand. My dad ended up passing that morning at 5:55 a.m. was the time that he passed. And I remember when I started writing my book, my wife, who's a naturopathic medical doctor, said, you know, what do you want to include in it? I'll help you with some of the research. And what do you want to talk to doctors about? And I said, I want to find studies that show why that worked. Mm-hmm. And at the time, there weren't a lot of studies. There's a lot more now. Yeah. But there was a study that showed that when we chant Om, as compared to chanting any other syllable, in this case, it was just chanting S. And they studied the brain through an fMRI study. So they were able to look at different regions of the brain. The group that chanted S, literally, there was no benefit. There was no areas of the brain that improved or lit up. But the areas of the brain from chanting Om that lit up were associated with improved cognition. And also the areas of the brain that are associated with inner peace and calm. So it's something that's called limbic deactivation. When that limbic area is deactivated, we experience more peace. So science is catching up to spirituality, things we've known for thousands of years. And now we know as well that other chants, this works as well. And there's a chant called the Kirtan Kriya, which you might be familiar with, which is the Sa Ta Na Ma. You're using different mudras, which mean different things, which is a whole other course that I teach about, right? You're firing and wiring at the same time that you're saying this. It would make sense that things might improve neurologically. But what they found is that chanting practice for just 12 minutes a day. And this study was done by the Alzheimer's Organization. This was not a small study. Not only showed that it improved cognition, improved memory, but it actually lengthened telomeres, which are associated with how long that we live. So I do this with my father-in-law, who's 91 years old. When he's stressed, we walk around the block. We took his blood pressure. We walk around the block. We do this. And literally, his blood pressure goes down and he's more present. And we do this in conjunction with other, you know, really great things as well. because he has pre-Parkinson's, with using music to improve his gait, mm-hmm. right? Specific music with rhythm. Drumming's really good for that as well. Another ancient biohack that's been used for thousands of years and highly studied is using music to move into these alpha brainwave states. But we also use other things, hyperbaric oxygen. We use infrared sauna, a variety of things to improve. So yeah, chanting and a lot of these things, I say music is the oldest biohack that we have. But for those, you know, for those people, just to kind of circle it back around, you know, to, you know, those people who are listening to this and they might feel a little bit overwhelmed, like, where do I start?
Yeah.
You know, where, how can I implement something simple? Like, I don't want to chant, or I can't chant at work. So how does that apply to me? So can we circle back around to like some practical uses? And then any more questions?
That was going
to
be my next question anyway, so go for it.
Okay. Yeah, because I want people to be able to plug these tools in to something that they could use viably to address burnout. And ultimately, you're looking to access more emotional intelligence. You're looking to access, you know, gratitude, kindness, compassion, purpose, whatever those are for you. So even if you started on the most simplest level, I'll call this like the blueprint A, which would be pick one song that moves you to a state of being thankful for something or a state of being happy about something. So for me, I call these musical pinnacles, and these are used highly effectively with Alzheimer's patients as well, because songs can create new neural pathways and new neuroplasticity where traditional language might not engage with someone that, but music is a completely different language that can access different memories. So listening to this one song that makes you happy, I love listening to like the Jackson 5, The Love You Save, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Louis Armstrong, What a Wonderful World. So I have a gratitude playlist of three songs that I used to start my day. But if you want to really simplify that, one song to start your day every morning that is just going to like fan the flames of your heart. Again, that fire has diminished in that burnout process that's probably happened over a long period of time. It didn't happen like overnight. So you can't expect it to just like, oh my God, I just started this humongous flame and my passion's burning again. But one song every day where you are fully present, hands on the heart, breathing in and out, every time you take a breath in, think of yourself fanning the flames of your heart. Do that for 30 days, one single song. Okay, I'm going to call that your happy song or your music pinnacle. For those of you who want to move to blueprint B, and I'll call this becoming the DJ of your life, right? Using music three times in your day to, okay, start that same way with that one song that brings you into that happy place. Then check in with yourself, like in the middle of your day, and ask yourself, where are you right now? And it's just like, think of it like three meals in your day. This is musical nutrition. So that first song is breaking the fast of you hearing something for the first time in 8 hours. Like you haven't eaten anything in 8 hours. What do you want to nourish your body with? What do you want to nourish your day with, right? That's the first song. But the second song, think about like lunchtime. Like, why do you eat lunch? Because the energy of nourishing yourself from that one meal has worn off. You need to reinvigorate yourself and to recharge your energy so you have another meal. And based on how you're feeling, you decide on what you're going to eat. Like, if you're feeling like really heavy, you might not have a heavy lunch. You might, you know, and so it's the same thing with music. Ask yourself, where am I now? Like, how do I feel? Check in. You know, again, place your hands on your heart. That's your home base. Where am I now? Where do I want to go? And what piece of music's going to take me there? So if you have like a big meeting and you're in corporate, you know, you might not want to listen to a relaxing piece of music. You might want to get up and move. And again, studies show that if you get up and move and dance, that's going to improve your cognition. And overall, it's going to put you in more of a more creative state. So, but if you're feeling like, oh my God, I just need like 5 minutes to myself, I need to listen to a relaxing piece of music. Or what I did like during COVID, like when I was like literally confined to a specific area, I said, how can I shift my environment? I would listen to a piece of music from another part of the world, which is like really awesome. I'd listen to a song from Jamaica or from Japan or from, you know, from France, and literally closing my eyes and feeling the energy of that area. What would it smell like being by the ocean there? What would the native teas be like? What would it taste like to have a glass of wine? What do the perfumes smell like there? And really creating a multi-sensory experience, I was literally, my mind was so engaged that it thought I was literally going there. My mind didn't know the difference. And we know this as well through research, that even thinking of a piece of music that you love can create those benefits for you, those autobiographical memories that we create around pieces of music. So using that at lunchtime to recharge your energy so you don't let the energy snowball out of you. If you had an incident with your boss, or the other way around, or someone, your executive assistant, you know, was challenging everything that you were talking about, and you feel drained, you know, from having to explain everything, whatever it is, you want to recharge yourself. So that second piece of music is like your lunch. And then your nightly music, think of that like dinner or dessert. Like at the end of your day, like, are you craving something sweet and nurturing that is going to feed your soul? Like something really gentle, you know, to wind down at night. So that's like your sweetness and your dessert for the day. And take some time to process your day and look at, you know, instead of just like going from your phone and firing and wiring, like take a moment and say, like, what were my challenges today? What did I learn from those challenges? As you're winding down, what were the things I have to be grateful for today? And if you can't find anything, because, you know, sometimes burnout can get really challenging. There's like, I can't even find anything to be grateful for. Then again, that's what this is for. Can I be grateful that I am waking up again or going to sleep again for another day? Can I be grateful that I have a heartbeat, that I have a breath? And taking it down to the my most minute level, but one of the most powerful levels of sound that happen within you at the end of your night. And this should feel like you're coming home. You know, like it's like when you travel and you've gone away to a different area. And, you know, that's what your day is like. Like you're traveling into all these other places in your day. Some of them resonate with your mission. Some of them don't. But at the end of your day, it should feel like when, you know, like when you come home from a big trip, you love traveling, it was exciting, but you're tired of a hotel rooms, right? And you come home, there's something about coming home to your own bed. That's what your heartbeat and your breath are. It's coming home. And that is where we start to really, we begin to get momentum. If we can engage at least these three times during a day, becoming the DJ of our own lives, then we're like, wow, I can't believe that, like, you know, 15 minutes a day could make this much of a difference. Like I'm feeling me again, which is what happened to me, you know, within where we started this conversation was that's where what I was looking for to re-engage with me. I didn't know what that was, but ultimately that's what is taking us into burnout. We lose connection with ourselves and our connection with where we started, where we thought that pinnacle was. And sometimes we have to reevaluate what that is, but you can't do that unless you understand that your heart and your what's going on inside has a frequency as well. And you have to get more familiar with that. And music is just one of the most powerful ways that we can re-engage with that. Because something, we can't prepare ourselves, like unlike other therapies, like if you go into talk therapy, and you know that this, oh, we talked about addressing this, you know, this burnout during my therapy. You can prepare yourself. And your subconscious begins to already create defense mechanisms on a conscious level But we want to move past the analytical mind. And music does that. It cuts right into, goes right to the heart. And you can't prepare for it because you hear that song and it's like, oh my God, why did I just start bawling? Why did I start crying? Because it's you. You're finding you again. You've disconnected, but now you're finding you. And that's really is where science and spirituality intertwine, where you apply the research, you get excited about it, but ultimately you have to find a balance because the science also can take us into our head and we can start overanalyzing. So we have to move to a place as well where we're moving out of that analytical mind and we're moving that long journey from the mind to the heart is where you're going to re-engage with you again and move from burnout to starting a new fire, a new flame, or an older flame that you thought was sleeping. And that's really what it's about for me in how I utilize music within all of it.
So we're going from burnt out to burning bold, folks. That's what we do around here, and you know it. Barry, where can people find you and find your music? That people are like, all right, we've heard enough. We need to actually get started. Like, I need to go put something on right now. Maybe Barry's got something for me. Where should they look?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm pretty easily found. You can find me on Spotify. I also have free music. Most people have YouTube. So you can go to my YouTube channel. Just type in Barry Goldstein. You'll see actually playlists there, as well as, music for relaxation, music for sleep. That's a great starting point. And then, if you go to my website as well, which we're kind of revamping, but you can find, specific, more customized music, longer pieces of music on my website will lead you to my courses that teach more about this practice and how you can delve in deeper to really what would be, considered the third blueprint of what we were talking about, where you begin to incorporate this even beyond three times a day. You begin to use chanting. You begin to utilize, working with your energy centers. So if this is something like, oh, I really like this, I want to learn more, I have courses on all this as well. And definitely picking the book up, because the book really, has over 50 studies that I researched and found that are highly credible studies. And also have a lot of experiential processes that you can utilize and plug into your day even beyond this.
And all of those links, Fried Fam, will be as per usual in the show notes. I want you to walk away from this episode with a really solid idea around the fact that there is a tool that is out there ready for you to use, ready for you to implement in a way that works for you, that resonates with you, that does the things that you need it to do, that is already a part of your life, but maybe you weren't using intentionally. One of the things that we always try to provide here is something that you can do right now, something that you can implement as soon as possible. So I want you to walk away from this just thinking about music in a different way. If that's how we get to start, if that's the beginning of it for you, that's a really great space. If you have that one piece of music that you love that always engenders some sort of positive feeling, I'm all in for that. But this initial idea of this actually really and truly matters, it's available to you. It's everywhere you look. It's all over the internet. You can get it in your phone. You can get it in your computer. You can try. I mean, it's literally, you can't get away from it even if you wanted to. But it's there for you. You can use it as a resource. You can use it as a tool. You can put that another thing in your toolbox to feel like you have some control over this beast that feels like sometimes it's controlling you. Barry.
Yeah, and it's never been more available.
Exactly.
And that's the whole point too. And what I would say as well, this is a great team building thing. So within your audience, like you have a tribe of people and they're always looking for support and community. And when I've done retreats and I ask everyone to share their happy song and everyone shares their song, there's something that goes with that, like a pride that this is the one that does it for me. Mm-hmm. And when people share that in a community, now you go from one happy song And then all of a sudden someone else says, oh, I love this song. And so, oh, I used to love that song. I haven't even thought about that song. So sometimes other people's autobiographical memories can open up instead of one song. Now you have 10 songs. So think about doing that like on social network or on your channels for people to, when they listen to this episode, like post your favorite, you know, your happy song on there and
we'll make a Spotify list.
Yeah. And start, create a Spotify playlist from everybody's happy song, make it available to them as well. And now you have like multiple tools and to try new music as well. Music you've never heard. Cause when someone else talks about theirs, you're like, oh my God, that sounds really cool. I'd love to hear that. Cause we're always looking for new music, but it takes there's so much out there. Like, how do you know?
Yeah.
So this is a great way to create great and corporations too. You know, there's so much necessity to bring people together as well. This is a great exercise to bring into, you know, to for team leadership.
Yeah. Fried Fam, I'm telling you, if you send me your favorite happy song, I will make a Spotify playlist. You know where to find me, kate@katedonovan.com. All right, we will wrap up for today. I am so very grateful for your time and your knowledge and your passion for what you do is so critical to share with people because it's a reminder of what their passion can look like in the future too. Fried Fam, I hope you let it sing until next time. Talk soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
Fried Fam, if you've been giving everything you've got to your work and are running on fumes, you're not alone. Burnout isn't a failing. It's your nervous system stuck in survival mode, and you can't sustain your energy from that place. That's why we've created Unfried, a 5-month group coaching program that helps mission-driven high achievers like yourself rebuild safety, calm their nervous system, and recover in a way that lasts. When you heal, you don't just get your energy back, you get your mission back. We've got 2 groups of 6 starting October 7th and 8th. Apply now and secure your spot at katedonovan.com/unfried.